ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you woke up tomorrow and found yourself Prime Minister, what would you do? How would you run Australia? What's your plan for energy, for housing, for the economy? The Economy Stupid has a three-part series talking about what Australia could become if we had the courage to choose it. Search for The Economy Stupid and look out for Choose Your Own Australia. Find it where you get your podcasts and the ABC Listen app.
His childhood name was Lhamo Thundup. He was recognized as the Dalai Lama as soon as he was like just a toddler. He lost his childhood in that way. And then he lost his country and has to leave and escape into exile in his early 20s. You know, who wouldn't be inspired hearing his life story of going through a whole lot of shifts like that? Still then, he keeps super positive and encourages every single human being to be more human. So I'm pretty sure people find him inspiring as a human being. And then for a Buddhist, definitely an enlightened being. And for a Tibetan, he is a father, a mother, leader of the nation, the spiritual leader as well. It's almost like he is like Tibet that resides within us.
Hello, I'm Meredith Lake. Welcome to Soul Search by podcast and on ABC Radio National Summer. When the Dalai Lama turned 90 back in July 2025, tributes flowed for the Tibetan leader, a Nobel laureate, globally recognisable, and to millions of people, a guide, a teacher, and an inspiration to peace. And from here in Australia, one of those tributes came from an extraordinary musician, Tenzin Chogyal. He's a Grammy-nominated vocalist, instrumentalist, and composer, and he's now based in Brisbane. As part of our summer highlight series here on Soul Search, let's revisit that conversation today and enjoy Tenzin's music and his memories of the Dalai Lama all over again.
So I come from a Tibetan nomadic family, and as a toddler, as I came out of Tibet with my family in Nepal, and then when my father passed away, I was sent into a school called Tibetan Children's Village, which is an orphanage, which is run by His Holiness the Dalai Lama's younger sister. So I used to, as a little kid growing up in that school with 3,000 other kids, we were fortunate those days, like early 80s. His Holiness then was not traveling as extensively as in the later part of his life. And we would be able to see him, every now and then he would come and visit our school. In that way, I have very fond memories of him coming to visit our school during our anniversaries and ceremonies.
He's been, in a way, a figure of real significance through your entire life so far.
Definitely, yes. Not only me, I mean, for any Tibetan living around the globe, he has been inspiration and also like a guide when we are feeling down, not only in terms of the Buddhist way of life, but also just in all ways of life, I think. He has been a super big inspiration for many Tibetans around the globe.
Tenzin, I'd love to hear more about your family and experience and your experience, in fact, growing up in Dharamshala before you migrated to Australia. But I know that you've described elsewhere His Holiness as your root guru, a really interesting phrase. And I wonder if you could just elaborate, I guess, on what that means and his role, I guess, as a spiritual teacher in your life.
I think when one says root guru, it's the main teacher that you follow and follow his, not only his vision, but also his advices, and the way he has lived becomes the path that you follow. I think there is a system in Tibetan where you choose your teacher. Like, it's not like a teacher in a classroom in a school.
No.
It's more of a teacher in the spiritual path that you are on. So he or she becomes the main guide and your, like, almost like your yidam. So in all parts of your career and parts of your life, kind of you look into his or her teachings.
It's really interwoven, isn't it, with so many things, the whole character of a life. Tenzin, you mentioned that your parents left Tibet when you were just a toddler. Could you tell me a little bit more about them and what their life was like in Tibet before they left?
They were nomads, so they were living with the land, and then whole of their life got disturbed by the annexation of Tibet. And that's why His Holiness the Dalai Lama has been in exile for the last 70 years. Mm. And my parents followed him into exile. And then on the way, like, well, we were stopping in, probably I was a toddler at that time, and my father who passed away. So I can't remember his face, but I do remember him playing flute, and in the evenings he would be winding down from his busy schedule of day, and then play the flute. So I think a lot of my parents' generation who followed into the exile, a lot of them actually now, they passed away in hope of heading back home. But I think His Holiness the Dalai Lama has been amazing teacher in holding the hopes alive within the Tibetans living in exile, also within Tibet as well. You know, like when the nation, whole nation is going through 70 years of exile. But I think His Holiness has been a super amazing backbone in keeping everyone's hope and resilience intact. He always says, 9 times fall down and you have to get up 10 times. And, like this one, this little advice I always remember, even if you fall down 9 times, you have the strength to rise up against the 10th time too. Hmm. And I've been very fortunate, you know, like when I was growing up in that orphanage in Tibetan children's village, he would visit. So I had the fortune of seeing him as a young child. And then when I grew up, actually when I came into Australia and started playing music, I've been very fortunate to be opening his public talks when he would visit Australia and New Zealand and Japan. So for a Tibetan artist, or, you know, like for a Tibetan, being able to offer your art in front of him and for him, I think it's something that I can't describe in words, the feeling of that. It's very personal feeling. It's very hard to describe if you ask me, how did you feel?
Yeah, but that's why we have music and other art forms to give voice to the things that are mere language cannot express, I suspect, Tenzin.
Yeah.
That's an incredible memory of your father, the sound of him playing the lute, or the flute, did you say? Tell me more about that. Did he play every day, or is that where you would say your own love of music comes from? What role did it have in your family and in your early life?
I think I would say, because of that, like my mother's singing super early in the morning, like 4 a.m, as my eyes are drifting back into the world from the dreaming zone. And and I would hear my mother murmuring all these chants. Mm. And then in the evenings, my dad would be, you know, coming back from his work and then play flute. And so these early karmic imprints of hearing them chant and play flute, and my elders, whenever there is some sort of ceremonies or weddings or Tibetan New Year or any kind of celebrations, all these elders would break into, you know, like beautiful songs and dances and ceremonial things. So this karmic imprint of hearing probably played a huge role in my venturing into music.
And a huge role, I suspect, in kind of maintaining and preserving a sense of identity, even in exile. I mean, I'm just thinking about the enormity of having to leave one's homeland, to leave a nomadic way of being, to embrace a more settled existence in a place like Dharamshala, so different in some ways. How was music important, I guess, to the formation and the life of that community that you grew up in?
I think probably His Holiness the Dalai Lama, super early in the exile days, he had an amazing vision. Just as we came into exile, he actually formed like mid-60s, I think, just after arriving into India, formed Tibetan Institute of Performing Arts. The importance of art form and dance form and folklores, through his wisdom, he saw that. And then he actually formed Tibetan Institute of Performing Arts in Dharamsala, as well as the, you know, like all the schools that he opened for lay people. Because back in Tibet, before 59, there were no schools in terms of, you know, like layperson to go to. Only schools that probably we had were the nunneries and the monasteries. Yeah.
So what was school like for you? I mean, you mentioned the orphanage. Like, what kind of education did that mean for you as a young boy growing up in that kind of exilic context?
I think, you know, as a little kid, probably I was admitted to that those schools in early 80s. Mm-hmm. But those schools were already, like, opened in as soon as we Tibetans came into exile. And His Holiness would say those days were the days when the friends of Tibet was sky and the land, the earth. Only those two were the ones that they knew. And so during those kind of time where His Holiness actually put a lot of effort into educating the kids, the children of Tibet. And so I would say these days when you go around around the world, and if you ask any of the Tibetan kids, most of them would have gone through those schools that His Holiness has envisioned. Those days were quite fun. I mean, all of the kids, we all had similar stories of losing our parents or losing the land and leaving your homeland and coming into a totally new place where you knew not much of. So as soon as you are admitted into those schools, you have probably 1,000 other brothers and sisters or friends.
But to create a family out of all those people with those very disruptive experiences is an incredible legacy, actually. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it almost sounds like you see His Holiness as really central to the preservation of a Tibetan identity, and that without him, what would have become of all this culture, this language, these art forms?
I think His Holiness is a monk, so he wouldn't be having his own kids. But I would say we are all children of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. the great 14th Dalai Lama, you know, like I feel like I'm one of his child who has been lifted from like a traumatic time when Tibet was going through a traumatic time. We have been lifted from those and given the opportunity to see the world and to widen our perspective, not only in the sense of keeping the traditions and the culture alive, but also, you know, seeing the bigger part of the world. Because, you know, if you look into the way His Holiness the Dalai Lama gives teachings, his way is about embracing the humanity, not only holding on to being just a Tibetan, but also becoming part of the humanity. I do remember him saying, we are all one, emotionally, physically, and mentally, we are all one. So he encourages anyone that you meet on the street as your friend or brothers or sisters, and he encourages one to experience that and be open.
I think that's one of the challenges of perhaps every time, but certainly of our own, Tenzin, to be genuinely open and to take the risk of engaging with people across difference, even when those differences are profound. And it's something, in a way, we can't talk about enough.
I think one thing that I have been instilled with from the teachings of His Holiness is to be a better version of yourself from yesterday's. In that way, sometimes it's quite encouraging, because, you know, like these days, you have the world in your palm, in a way. There's too much information. So I think sometimes it's quite good to just take time for yourself and be kind to yourself so that you can be a better version of yourself from yesterday, what you were.
This is Soul Search on ABC Listen and on Radio National Summer. I'm Meredith Lake, and I'm talking with Tenzin Chogyal. He's a Grammy-nominated musician who grew up in the Tibetan community in exile in India before migrating here to Australia. Tenzin's a champion of Tibetan culture, and over the last several years, he's performed at the Dalai Lama's public events in Australia, Japan, and New Zealand. In a few minutes' time, you're going to hear some of the music that Tenzin composed with Philip Glass on the occasion of the Dalai Lama's 90th birthday in July 2025. Back when Tenzin moved to Australia, though, the Tibetan community here wasn't very big. But the 14th Dalai Lama was by then a Nobel Peace Laureate and one of the world's most recognisable people. So, what was it like for Tenzin and the Tibetan diaspora in Australia to have such a famous leader?
When I first came to Australia, in Brisbane, I think we were only three Tibetans.
Really?
Yeah, and then there was a Buddhist institute up in Chenrezig in Udalo, up Sunshine Coast, which was set up in, I think, early 70s. But there were quite a lot more living in Sydney and Melbourne then, but not as much as what we have now. Mm-hmm. Like in Brisbane, we have about 200 Tibetans living now, and then probably about 2,000 in Sydney and a little bit around that also in Melbourne. So those days when His Holiness would come and visit Australia, we would always get a special private audience with him.
Really?
And it would be super special. Like, he would encourage us. Like, he would be giving public talks to wider Australian community, mm-hmm. like in a big arena, and we would be totally amazed and feel so proud of being Tibetan and having a leader like that. Like we would have a little private audience with him, and he would spend an hour and give us a talk and have Q&A with him. Those days were quite amazing. I think the last time when His Holiness was visiting our shows, the Australian shows, he made sure that he actually visited Uluru.
That's true. In 2015, he came to Central Australia, and I believe he met with Anunu here on country.
Yeah, and I was there, and I sang for the our Aboriginal brothers and sisters just before His Holiness gave a talk to them, you know, like the public talk. Mm-hmm. And it was really beautiful, like, yeah. Just even to think about that, you know, he's been coming to Australia for so many years and met with so many of the politicians and the geopolitical game players. But then he made sure that he went and visited the heart of the Australian country, his last visit, yeah. So I actually carry that moment to my heart. Because over the years I have lived in Australia, I've always wanted to visit that sacred bronze mountain. But I kept it away. And I really wanted to do it when there is a very special moment. And somehow that happened. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama visited the Bronze Mountain in the heart of Australia, and I couldn't miss it, so I was there.
Tenzin, you said that you've often performed music at his events in Australia, those events that you mentioned for a wider Australian community. How did that come about?
You know, when I first came to Australia, I really loved music and I like playing music. But I didn't know that I would be venturing into the music world in Australia. But I did bring my instruments in case if I, you know, like at times when I miss my community back in India. And so music can play a big role in, you know, overcoming loneliness. But then somehow somebody knew there was a Tibetan musician come to Brisbane. And so I did a concert in a university. And Woodford Folk Festival organizers were at that concert and on the first year of my arrival to Australia. And they saw me and then they asked me if I would come to Woodford Folk Festival. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what was what this festival was.
Okay.
And that was the first time when I went to Woodford Folk Festival. And through that, I think the organizers of the His Holiness the Dalai Lama's visit, they asked me if I would actually open the public talks when His Holiness gives the public talks in Australia. Hmm. And I was totally like, what would I say? You know, as I said before, there's no words that would describe the joy in being asked to play at his public talks. Probably, if you could see me right now, I have the biggest smile when I'm saying that.
I can hear the smile on your face. I mean, what an incredible invitation to receive, Tenzin. But how do you decide what music to play at such an event? You know, because there's so, the music holds so much. You talked about the karmic imprint of the music and the chants that you heard growing up. You've talked about the way music holds culture and identity and how important that was to His Holiness in shaping the exile community in India all those years ago. So with all of this, how did you decide, how do you decide what to play on any of those occasions?
I don't know how to say this, but I just like playing music. And with my purest heart, for me, being able to play just before his public talk, it's like offering. Since I love music, so the best offering I could give is music. Maybe the first time I did prepare something, I was actually going to present a very old traditional piece when I first got the opportunity in Australia. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, most of the time I break into an improvised piece when I'm actually at concerts for my wider Australian audience. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for the first time in Australia when I got that opportunity, I learned one super traditional song. Mm-hmm. And then just as I got up on the stage, I thought, if I do this, probably I'll be cheating myself because I really love improvising. So I actually broke into an improvised piece on Heart Sutra, like Gate Gate Para Gate Parasam Gate Bodhiye Soha, gone, gone, gone beyond, gone further beyond, so be it. Like somehow I didn't do the song that I prepared, but instead I just broke into this improvised piece on this beautiful sutra, Heart Sutra, yeah.
Yeah. I think for a tradition to be alive, right, it can't be static.
No.
And I can imagine how that kind of improvisation, an element of innovation is important for any tradition to remain a living tradition, right? But it sounds like there's a real freedom that you experience in embracing that improvisation. Like, what does it feel like as a musician to at once be so embedded in the tradition and yet so able to expand on it or re-inhabit it in a new way like that?
Any tradition or like a cultural thing from the past is at one point of the time a contemporary piece. So I think a tradition is always evolving, you know, like only it's changing each time. And also I carry the lineage of Tibetan nomads, and in their music, it's basically improvised. They would break into a song as they see a cloud drifting in the sky or the white open space, you know, like you just express the feeling of that through a couple of words in a very super beautiful melodic form, as if you are offering a song to the deities of the sky or the mountain or the river or the trees, you know, like, yeah. So improvisation is actually part of the tradition in any, I think, in any form of traditional art forms.
Hmm. Tenzin, you've said before that music is like drifting clouds that fly freely over the man-made geographical borders in this infinite space of possibilities. And it could sound like a cliche to say that music transcends the boundaries and borders between us. And I don't want to take those boundaries and borders lightly, given not only Tibetan experiences, but the experience of so many communities around the world that have been ruptured precisely over borders. But is it possible to explain how music is part of, I guess, the kind of peace that you, I hope, experience?
I think music has this amazing, amazing quality to disregard the racial differences, the geographical differences, and all these boundaries that we humans have put on, imposed upon ourselves. I think the music can definitely be a beautiful way of connecting the differences that we have labeled upon ourselves, I think. So I really think music has amazing ways of healing qualities, and for a Tibetan refugee like us, and then many refugees around the globe, if you ask them probably what is the joyous times that they can think of in the times of atrocity, probably music and their teachers, you know, their spiritual teachers gives guidance to them. So for me also, you know, like whenever I feel lost or whenever I feel kind of directionless at times, you know, we all face that kind of spaces. I always look into some, like music actually heals those emotions. And then if I have to look into some philosophical dissection of that feeling or the emotional map that I'm going through, then I would listen to some teachings of His Holiness the Dalai Lama just to compose myself, bring myself back to a joyous space.
This is Soul Search on Radio National and by podcast with ABC Listen. I'm Meredith Lake, and I'm talking with the musician Tenzin Chogyal as Tibetans around the world mark the 14th Dalai Lama's 90th birthday. Tenzin is well known as a Tibetan instrumentalist, and his forthcoming 10th album is a collaboration with the American composer Philip Glass.
As a musician, I think I really wanted to do something special on the 90th birthday of His Holiness, because this year marks the 90th birthday. The best way I thought would be is involving the Tibetan children from the school that I went to back in those days, you know, like the Tibetan Children's Village. And so, you know, like when you have kids singing, you will definitely feel the innocence, the purity and the resilience. So I thought it would be super beautiful to involve the kids. Yeah. And then the lyrical thing that I chose was probably every Tibetan on this planet will probably know this stanza, which is in Tibetan, it reads, Kangri rawe ko ve shingam te penta dewa malu chowene. Chere siwa tenzi gya tsoyi, shabe siti padu tengyuchi. And it translates to, in the land encircled by the snowy mountains is the source of all happiness and benefit. All compassionate Tenzin Gyatso, ocean of wisdom, may you stand firm until samsara ends. So it's a little stanza that is kind of asking your teacher to live long as possible, so that we all can enjoy his wisdom. And it's like a long life prayer from oneself. So, and then I came up with a very super easy melody to catch on so that the kids can actually get it very quickly. And anyone who listens to it, as soon as they hear it for the second time, they will start to hum it.
True.
Yeah. I was so glad because it's actually collaborated with my dear friend Philip Glass on this piece of music. And we have Alex Gray playing the piano on that. And then a string quartet called Scotia Strings. So they are amazing musicians. And then Philip arranged wrote those piece with me. The song actually is a part of an album that I wanted to release this year as a homage to His Holiness the Dalai Lama called Be the Sky. And so the first single that we are going to release is Kangri Rawe, or The Snowy Mountains. Thank you.
Tenzin, I was struck by what you might call the non-traditional instrumentation of this piece, and you've spoken about the piano, the string quartet, and at the same time you said earlier that you brought your instruments with you to Australia just in case. And I wonder if you could talk about, I guess, the relationship that you have to the flute and to other traditional Tibetan instruments. What does it mean to you to play them? And if you could just describe them, perhaps for people who don't know much about the traditions of Tibetan music.
In this, actually, the piece that you just heard, there's a string instrument, which is the backbone of this, in the instrumentation. The instrument is called drangin. But I named my drangin metal, meaning the flower. Drangin is like, it can be three string or six strings. And when it is three string, it's single string. And then when it is six strings, it's a double string. And it's almost like a lute or maybe a banjo, but not as twangy as banjo. It's a bit more like earthy tone. And it has probably closest sound that you would probably find is rubab, which is a like Afghanistan instrument, and also shamisen, which is the Japanese instrument. So it's very simple instrument, but drangin is an instrument that carries almost the weight of every Tibetan storytellers through music. Almost every Tibetan musicians, they will know how to play the instrument, but it's a very lonely instrument. It doesn't really play with other instruments. So I've been very fortunate. I've been able to introduce drangin into the orchestra. And, you know, like if you listen to Tibetan traditional songs, drangin is a loner in a way. Because a lot of the musicians will play the drangin and sing a song. So I've been fortunate enough to introduce my metal, the drangin, into the world of other amazing strings. And so I'm super happy with that. Yeah, and then in this song you will hear the drangin, the three-string lute, is actually the backbone. And then beautifully sung by these beautiful Tibetan young kids from the Tibetan Children's Village School. They did an amazing job, and I purposely kept the off keys that they sang in. I didn't want it to auto-tune it or anything like that. I really wanted to give the listeners what those kids were actually singing. The warmth, you would be able to feel that in the song, I think.
Tenzin, your music, and partly because of just the creativity of your collaborations over years and years and years, you know, has found audiences that even half a century ago are kind of unimaginable. And in a way, that's true too of the Dalai Lama's teaching. He is the first Dalai Lama who's been so well known globally, the one who has given a degree of global recognition of Tibetan Buddhism to so many people. And I wonder how you reflect on that. Why do you think so many people from such different cultural and even religious backgrounds have found a Tibetan spiritual leader so compelling in their own lives? Like, how do you account for his influence, for his reception beyond the community of the Tibetan diaspora?
If you think about His Holiness, the chronology of his life, he was recognized as the Dalai Lama as soon as he was like just a toddler. Mm. And then he lost his freedom of being a child at around that time already, because he was put into the pedestal of being the Dalai Lama. His childhood name was Lhamo Thundup. And then when he was recognized, his name, you know, Tenzin Gyatso, the Dalai Lama, you know, the great 14th Dalai Lama. He lost his childhood in that way. And then he became, you know, he had to go into the central Tibet, become the temporal and the spiritual leader as soon as he was in his teens. And then he lost his country and has to leave and escape into exile as he was in his early 20s. You know, who wouldn't be inspired hearing his life story of going through whole lot of shifts like that? Mm. And he lost his country. Still then, he keeps super positive and encourages every single human being to be more human, when he could have easily gone into, what about me? Instead, he didn't go in that way. He, amazingly, how positive he has been, even through all these turmoils and hardships that he went through. So I'm pretty sure people find him inspiring. As a general wider audience, probably, I'm pretty sure a lot of them find him inspiring as a human being. And then for a Buddhist, definitely an enlightened being. And for a Tibetan, he's a father, a mother, a Tibetan leader of the nation, and also the spiritual leader as well. It's almost like he is like Tibet that resides within us.
He is the Tibet that resides within us.
Yeah.
How do you say that in Tibetan?
How do I say that? You asked me suddenly, so I couldn't. Yeah. How do I say that in Tibetan? I will actually go back and write a song about that, actually, in Tibetan.
I would love to hear it when you do, Tenzin. Yeah. I mean, given what you've said, I can imagine that it's almost inconceivable, really, to contemplate what next. But I know you were part of a film project called The Last Dalai Lama? And I guess I'm curious about what that question mark feels like for you now, in his 90th year, in a world where geopolitically there is so much strife and so much uncertainty. What does that question mark feel like to you?
He will definitely come back. Many times His Holiness has been asked about his reincarnation, the 15th reincarnation. And China is playing big politics about it. But I'm sure he has the last say, and he has said that as long as Tibetan people want him to come back, he will come back, but not in a controlled Tibet under China, but in a free place to continue his work. You know, China definitely is playing huge politics, and as you know, probably about the 11th Panchen Lama that has been recognized by Dalai Lama. And as soon as China knew about that, he was taken away and kidnapped as young as when he was only six. And now he would probably be in his 30s, but we don't know where he is. And they instilled a puppet Panchen Lama, the Chinese government. So probably they want to do similar things like that. But His Holiness has been super firm about his own reincarnation. So you will probably hear more from His Holiness's office in Dalai Lama's office in Dharamsala. You know, like, I know all the media they want to know about. But I think I would rather rejoice the time that I have with this present Dalai Lama and then let the 15th Dalai Lama be decided by Dalai Lama himself, the 14th one.
In the meantime, what is your hope for the Tibetan community here in Australia, which, as you said, has been through so much over the last few generations? At this time of potential transition and change, what do you think the 14th Dalai Lama's legacy will be for the community here?
Actually, most of the Tibetan communities that is living in Australia is actually ex-political prisoners or beings who have been through the atrocities in Tibet under the Chinese communist regime. So because of the atrocities, they have escaped into India, and then the Australian government has given asylum to them over in Australia. Mm-hmm. So larger part of the Tibetan community in Australia have that experience. And, you know, those were the days, you know, like even carrying a Dalai Lama's photo in their home or in their pocket or in their books would be a crime and could be arrested. Yeah, so I think if you happen to encounter a Tibetan living in Australia in a pub or in a cafe, ask them about their life story, and they will definitely have a story of how they escaped into exile. Just to see and have an audience with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and now living in a free world. Yeah, so, and a lot of them, they have families back in Tibet. So a lot of the time they can't actually exchange about their life freely. You know, they have to be censoring, because if sometimes when they are talking in Tibet, like having a FaceTime, they have to make sure that there is no Dalai Lama's photo in the background or Tibetan national flag in the background or anything that connotates about the struggle, the movement that is being strived in exile. Because things that you do over here could affect your family and friends' lives in Tibet. So they have to actually sometimes censor themselves in that way. Like, there has been Tibetan musicians who have made songs paying homage to His Holiness or paying homage to their freedom struggle of Tibet. Their life has been taken away by Chinese communist regime by imprisoning them. So I sometimes say a single word could cost one's life in Tibet.
Tenzin, I'm feeling the weight of what it might mean for you to have this conversation with me. I mean, you play and perform internationally. You've been nominated for Grammy Awards. You've been very outspoken as a musician and in other ways over such a long time. But I don't take lightly the time and the openness with which we've had this conversation.
I think just even thinking about Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, just his name, you know, saying out loud brings about joyous feeling within me. So I'm pretty sure we are so fortunate to be walking on this earth when amazing being like His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama of Tibet is with us, walking the same earth with us. So, you know, like, look around. There's not many human beings around this world who has kept to their words since they were teen age, you know, talking about benefit of all human beings, even when your own homeland is being annexed, and even when your own people are having to go through so much sadness. But he kept the hope of being a better human being, even in the worst phase of his own time.
Mm. Thank you, Tenzin, for your music and for this conversation. Thank you. I just so appreciate you being on Soul Search. It's a real pleasure and a delight to me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Meredith.
Tenzin Chogyal is a world-renowned Tibetan-Australian musician, and you heard some of the piece that he wrote with Philip Glass to mark His Holiness the Dalai Lama's 90th birthday in July 2025. The song is called Snowy Mountain, and it features both the Drunyan and singers from the Tibetan children's village in Dharamsala. It's the first single from Tenzin's album Be the Sky, and it was great to hear it first on Soul Search around the time of the Dalai Lama's birthday. On ABC Radio National this summer, we're sharing some of our favourite episodes of Soul Search from the last year. So jump onto the ABC Listen app, search for Soul Search and add us to your favourites. Make sure you listen out for it. For now, thanks to producer Rowan Salmond for putting together this episode of Soul Search. My name's Meredith Lake, and I'll leave you now with more of Tenzin Chogyal's Snowy Mountain by podcast, on Radio Australia, and on ABC Radio National Summer.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.